Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. We're going to be calling Benjamin Fulford in just a moment. This is episode 243 of the Highway Diary podcast. Quickly, I want to plug a show I'll be performing at the Verve in Somerville, February 21st. Two shows, 7:30 and 9:30, and the headliner is Harrison Greenbaum. The host is Danny Braff, and Tyler Langlois is going to have a appearance on the second show. So anyway, doing stand-up comedy at Verve, February 21st in Somerville, New Jersey. Shows at 7:30, 9:30, and they may even open a 11:30 show. Anyway, now let's call Benjamin Fulford. Here we go.
Hello?
It's Mr. Fulford.
Yes. All right, let's get this thing done and over with.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Mr. Benjamin Fulford was the Asia-Pacific Bureau Chief of Forbes magazine for many years. Now he runs his own website at benjaminfulford.net. For $11 a month, you'll get his weekly report. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
First, I want to apologize. I was real skeptical last time we talked. You said that Chuck Schumer gives notes to Jimmy Kimmel every day for his show and his talking points. And I was like, man, I don't know if that's true, you know? And then I came across a clip of Stephen Colbert mentioning you the week that you left Forbes. And I'd like to play that for you now. Here it is. This is Stephen Colbert on Benjamin Fulford.
Here we go. I want to talk about something. There was a story on Netscape today by a writer named Benjamin Fulford, who quit his job at Forbes after they refused to run a piece he wrote that was critical of one of their advertisers. Now, I'm with Forbes magazine on this one. You do not bite the hand that feeds you, unless, of course, that hand is made of Pizza Hut's new Pizzone, with over a pound of cheese, pepperoni, and a crispy crust that fits right into the hand you shouldn't otherwise be biting. Now, Fulford is accusing the Illuminati, the secret society that controls the world, of planning to depopulate the Earth. Now, normally, I would ignore this kind of raving from an obscure hack, but there is one reason I want to talk about it. The possibility that the Illuminati might let me join. Masters of the Temple, please.
All right, well, he says that you were critical of the advertiser last time we spoke. They gave you this mission to go run a piece on someone. They never said they were the advertiser because that's a conflict of interest.
What happened was there was an antivirus company they asked me to do a story on. And I went to the Philippines and met these people, and then I went to a Filipino slum to interview the guy who created a virus called the I Love You virus. And he told me that it was the virus company that paid him to make that virus. And so then I thought, this is a big scoop. And then my editor started saying, hey, you know, Mr. Fulford, sorry, we don't trust you. We're not going to run this story. And then Mr. Nakagawa, who was the advertising guy for Forbes in Japan, phoned me up and told me that the president of that company had just given Steve Forbes $500,000 payment to kill the story. And that's why I quit. Mm. And I used to have the tapes of all this. I named the company, but I don't know if I still have the tapes. Maybe I could, but I've been saying this, and Forbes hasn't acted on this. So, you know, they know it's true. I know it's true. But anyway, why don't we get to the real issue, why this Mr. Colbert suddenly felt the need to mention me, okay?
Yeah.
This is where it all started. You know, I had a pretty thriving side business writing for Japanese magazines and publishing books in Japanese, which is why I was able to quit my corporate job and not, you know, end up homeless, you know? But I interviewed Heizo Takanaka, who was then Japan's Minister of Finance and Economy, and asked him why he had handed over control of all of Japan's listed companies to a bunch of Western oligarchs, including David Rockefeller. And what happened then, I have all this on video, of course. What happened then, and I have this on tape too, Mr. Takanaka sent a self-described assassin to visit me. We talked in a hotel room, and he told me that I would be, you know, they would give me the job of finance minister of Japan, and I could become very rich, but I had to go along with a plan to kill 90% of the world's population because we needed to save the environment, and since the war wasn't good at killing people off, they're going to use starvation and disease. Again, I have all this on tape. So, you know, that's when I kind of, you know, got red-pilled or whatever you want to call it. I just sort of, that blew my mind. And then, the same week, I got contacted by a Japanese movie director who took me to meet a gentleman in another hotel room who said that they represented an Asian secret society. They had, like, about 8 million members and several hundred thousand assassins. And they said that this society could not be used for personal benefit. It could only be used for the greater good. Okay? Mm-hmm. And this was the red and blue. So, on the one hand, I'm offered enormous wealth and power, but I have to go along with killing 90% of everybody. On the other hand, I have to pay membership fees, and they won't help me. They'll provide me with protection, but they can stop, you know, this project. And so I was like, you know, totally befuddled, and my mind was kind of like whizzing around in confusion for a few days. But then I had what I call my Kill Bill moment. Remember this movie, Kill Bill? These two women are fighting with swords, and it's not clear who's going to win. But then suddenly, one of the ladies grabs the other lady's eye because she only had one eye, and it was it, right? And I said, oh, target the eye, and so I gave the Asian secret societies a list of members of the Bilderberg, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Trilateral Commission, the people who are members of all three. And I said, you target those people, it's about 200 people, and you can stop the genocide. And that's when this Colbert thing appeared. And then after that, you know, Dave Rockefeller came to Japan and I interviewed him. But that's why I chose to join the Asian Secret Society and not this Western group, which I guess we now think of as Chabad or the Messianic Evangelicals, whatever. Some people call them the Frankist Sabbatean Jews. These are the people who thought that it was up to them to carry out the biblical end times prophecies, which involved starting a war between Gog and Magog and killing 90% of everybody and enslaving the rest. So I've been in a battle against these people ever since.
Yeah, and Mr. Colbert has admitted who his allegiance lies with.
But now you're going to discriminate against me because I'm a Freemason? Which I am not, because it's a secret society, and if I were in it, I'd have to lie and say that I am not. Which I am not. And just think of the poor Freemasons. Don't they already face enough judgment? I mean, living a double life, sneaking around, never being able to show their family who they really are. And all the lies. Saying, I'm just working late, honey, when really I'm meeting a bunch of men to do God knows what in a windowless hall. I can't believe it's come to this.
By the time you learn quantum mechanics, it's like being a 33rd degree Freemason.
I know what that's going to be.
So he goes, this astronomer goes on the Colbert Report, and he goes, you know, being an esoteric astronomer is just like being a 33rd degree Mason. And Colbert goes, I know what that's like. It's like, what? You know, I'm from New Jersey, and I heard for a long time that Stephen Colbert, he teaches Catholic Sunday school every day, and yet he sneaks around in robes and worships Lucifer. So this is a guy who really doesn't have a moral compass. You can't serve two masters. You can't serve Jesus and Satan at the same time. But
right. Well, So anyway, you know, and you, but I'm going to give you more of a backstory since what happened after that, because this is also important too. So we were able to stop the genocide by threatening to behead the pyramid of these, whatever you want to call these people. But then the Asian Secret Society, they asked me to find, you know, Western groups that would be, you know, also support this plan who were opposed to this plan to kill 90% of everybody. And so I contacted the British Commonwealth and the people behind the global warming carbon scam, because they were basically arguing that you could save the environment and not kill 90% of the people by paying third world countries to grow forests, right? So even though carbon doesn't cause global warming, the idea of saving forests without killing everybody meant that they were opposed to this plan. Now, they lost the power struggle. That was why the election was stolen for George Bush Jr. and Al Gore and his people lost. But there was a clear schism in the Western elite, and so I contacted these people, and I also contacted people at the Pentagon, or they contacted me from who were tired of being manipulated by the Israelis and the Messianics to wage useless wars in the Middle East, and I got them on board, and then the Russians came to me, and I got them on board, and then a group called the Gnostic Illuminati, who were opposed to bloodline rule, also contacted me. And they were sort of, I had to explain to them why it wasn't a good idea to kill 90% of everybody. But I think eventually I got them on board too. But then in the meantime, the Asian Secret Society said that I had to obey them. If they said black was white and white was black, then I had to agree. And they told me that, I had to support China ruling the world. And I said, no, I can't do that. You know, I'm sorry, but that's not right. I mean, if you want me to obey you, you have to convince me you're right. So at that point, they cut me off. And that's why. And then I was informed by the assassin sent by Henry Kissinger and Dave Rockefeller via the Hazel Takanaka that a hit was out on me and that nobody's going to protect me and I was going to die. So, fortunately, as a journalist, I built what's known an insurance file, because a lot of my colleagues had been killed. So I had information that could put the big boss of Japan's largest crime syndicate, the Yamaguchi-gumi, in jail for murder. So I went to the headquarters of the Yamaguchi-gumi and I bullhorned them and I let them know that if something happened to me, all that information would be sent to all newsletters or news outlets around the world. So I basically turned the world's largest crime gang into my bodyguards. So that's my connection with the Yakuza. I'm not a criminal and I don't do anything illegal. I want to make that very clear.
You just wanted to have them give you protection from the Rockefellers without going, without paying dues to them and all the rest of it, and following their orders.
Well, this was, you see, you're mixing different things here. This is not the Asian Secret Society. This is another group, right? This is a crime gang. I mean, they call themselves Ninkyo. It's like a mutual protection society. I would say only about a third of them are actual criminals, and the rest are, are businessmen who need protection. And so they joined this mutual protection group. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I couldn't outbid Dave Rockefeller on a hit contract, you know what I mean? I'm not a billionaire, I'm just a freaking journalist, you know?
Yeah.
With the low salary that implies, right?
But somebody very close to you, your webmaster, I was reading your report from last week, and your webmaster was found having committed suicide, but you say showed signs of PCP poisoning. What happened to your webmaster?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people. What happened, I mean, this is many years, and we're now fast-forwarding a bunch of years, right? But he suddenly, it's like someone flipped the switch, right? And said he was going to escape the Matrix, and he was like caught banging against the wall in a temple and apparently trying to escape to a different dimension. And he got arrested by the police a couple of times. There was a lady at the McDonald's near his house that he was saying, remove a devil from your who's infesting you, and I guess she called the cops too. I mean, he flipped, and the thing is, okay, I'm going to tell you a different story before we go back to this guy. The Illuminati person they sent to contact me was a drug smuggler who went by the name of Alexander Romanov. He had a bunch of names, so let's just call him Alexander Romanov. And he showed up with 70 kilos of marijuana and said I had to put him in touch with the Yakuza or else they would kill me, right? And this marijuana was laced with PCP, and right away I introduced him to Japanese military intelligence, pretending to be Yakuza, and told him it was a trap, and it was. But in the meantime, this guy started smoking this stuff, and he also became insane, and it was a clear sign he had all the evidence of PCP poisoning from this tainted marijuana, and. My webmaster showed the same symptoms, and I know he, recently acquired a girlfriend with, who was a drug consumer with a questionable background, and so I'm guessing that she gave him tainted stuff that caused him to flick a switch, but I don't know. I didn't, nobody tested his blood, he apparently committed suicide. I don't know how. His family won't tell me what exactly happened, but he went back to the States and apparently committed suicide. And before he did that, he tried to sabotage my website.
Yeah, I want to get into Mr. Romanov. I want to get into Mr. Zagami. But before we do, related to this, people being suicided, last time we spoke, I talked about Anthony Bourdain. Just the timing to me, it seemed really fugazi. And our good friends at Red Pill News had let's just say, unsavory character who was around the Anthony Bourdain situation. So I just want to play this clip.
He goes down the road because he's special. He's an elected official. He goes to a place called the Chateau Marmont. Now, Schiff actually shows up in drag when he comes.
Adam Schiff.
And he went in and had a delivery. Delivery was a 10 or 11 year old African American boy. Well, this kid had been doped up by his handlers to keep him under control. That room was wired.
Nice.
It was all recorded. There's a dead child that he raped. Top of the hill, there's a witness. And we've seen Schiff there. Seen the cleanup crews, this type of stuff. And Schiff had the witness killed. Nancy Pelosi has a copy of this video, which is why she's letting Schiff take the forefront on this BS impeachment stuff, and she's staying very quiet. The person that was one bungalow away was Anthony Bourdain.
Have you heard anything about this case, Mr. Fulford?
No, to be honest, it's it's sort of the thing they do. They do this a lot, right?
It's weird. It's like unless they have a tape on you killing a black boy, they won't let you. Then they're like, okay, you want to be a politician? They don't let you get to that level unless
they have something they can blackmail you with. Yeah, absolutely. They have that on Trump too, but the. The U.S. military industrial are keeping that under wraps because they still need him, to clean out the system.
Last time we also talked, we talked about how there was a book that described your murder, and they were the Illuminati has to confess what they do before they do it. There's a singer called Melanie Martinez, and she sung a song called Principle, and in it, This is a lyric. I tried to make you listen, but you want it your way. Riot, killing kids all day and night. Killing kids all day and night.
Yeah.
Let's just play that one more time. Oh, wait, it didn't work. Oh, crap. But yeah, she says, killing kids all day and night. Like, that's just a groovy track to follow. There's a guy called Brian Hook who was doing one of these think tank presentations about why we should go into the war in Iran, and then it was interrupted. So Brian Hook is interrupted by a protester.
It is time for all nations to join us in holding Iran to a new level of accountability for its destructive behavior, especially its lawless pursuit of ballistic missiles.
Ask, do you think these sanctions are hurting the regime, or are they hurting the Iranian people? They're hurting the Iranian people. You are making a case for war with Iran.
Now, this lady, Medea Benjamin, she weighs 89 pounds, and Brian Hook cowers and looks to his bodyguard, and it's like he's proposing war with Iran, and he can't strong arm an 89 pound woman.
I remember I asked George Soros when he was speaking at the Foreign Correspondents Club of Japan about the families who controlled the Federal Reserve Board, and there was a look of sheer horror on his face. I mean, he gave an evasive answer, but it was a look of sheer terror when I mentioned these families. And I the same happened to Paul Wolfowitz, the famous neocon. He was also at the Foreign Correspondents Club, and I asked him a similar question. Again, for a second, a look of sheer terror, okay? Mm-hmm. These people are who get to these positions, they've gone through MK Ultra, which means they've been traumatized to the extreme before being put in positions of power, with the implication being if you don't toe the line, you go back to the trauma. Mm-hmm.
And this Melanie Martinez, all of her music videos, it's like they're in the psych ward. She's like tied to a bed being drugged, you know, and it's like if you watch her music videos, it's just a tutorial on the MK Ultra project, and they're putting it out like pop music. So the sheep will just
I had a young lady stay with me who had been, she told me she'd been at MK Ultra. She'd been chained to a bed in a hospital and drugged and forced to watch weird music videos all day. And she escaped and asked for my help, and I did help her. She's okay now, but boy, man, what a story. You know, this is someone I actually met. So we're dealing with some very sick people, they've been in power for so long, they can't believe that their control grid is falling apart and that they're being exposed.
One person who did an interview in Paris, in a French news outlet, Macaulay Culkin.
I saw that.
Did you post this on one of your posts? I believe I got this from you. He was a pervert producer, was hitting on him and looking at his crotch and just saying inappropriate things. And then he noticed his red shoes, and he goes, "Oh, you like those shoes? Oh, do you know who Heather O'Rourke is?" And he goes, "Yeah, I remember." And then he's like, "Oh yeah, humans make the best shoes." And Heather O'Rourke was on Poltergeist. She was the young girl who goes, "They're here," in both the Poltergeist movies. She died when she was like 10 years old, and I have the Wikipedia on her death. It says her intestines ballooned to 4 inches in diameter. O'Rourke underwent surgery to repair an acute bowel obstruction. And then she had septis, meaning her septic shock, like her...
I mean, look, like I say, we're dealing with some people who I know that they're going to be hunted down and strung from lampposts if people find out what they've been doing. And people are finding out. A critical mass, especially in the military intelligence community, knows about these people, and they're being hunted down as we speak.
Hmm. Well, okay, this is really the reason why I want to have you on my podcast. Mr. Leo Zugami went to Japan. You did a series of interviews together. I have a small clip here of you and Leo forming an alliance.
So we're coming to a fundamental agreement that everything has to change, and for the better.
Absolutely, and I think that this is an historical opportunity between the Illuminati, the real Illuminati of the West, and the real Illuminati of the East, to start this dialogue in the name of peace, tolerance, and truth.
So you guys started out best friends, and it seemed like, okay, well, look at this guy, Mr. Fulford. He's connecting the East and the West and trying to expose these people.
All right. Well, let me explain what happened, all right?
Yes, sir.
First of all, he showed up after we, you know, the Asian society was threatened to, you know, bump off the people who I mentioned, the Bilderberger Trilateral, you know, Council of Foreign Relations people. And the thing is, though, okay, he talked that, yeah, let's do this for the sake of the planet. But then while he was here, he showed up with his girlfriend who said that she was going to go to Okinawa after the visit to Tokyo to help with this concert. And she phones me from Okinawa saying that this African-American guy organizing this concert told her she had to have sex with him. And she was in a panic. I said, well, where are you? All right, you have a credit card? I said, just take a taxi to the airport. And then I'll put you up at my manager's house. She will take care of you, and we'll make sure you're okay. And then Zagami turns around and says, I want that guy killed. I want you to order him killed for insulting my girlfriend, right? And otherwise, we'll send some hitmen from Sicily to kill him, right? So I explained this to the Japanese, who said, well, if they want to send hitmen from Sicily, we'll take him to the guy, right? But I was thinking, hey, he didn't actually rape or anything. He just sort of said you had to do this. So, you know, at the very, maybe he should pay some financial compensation or something. But they're trying to get me to either have him beat up or killed or castrated or do something illegal, right? And then later when I visited Zagami in Italy, she told me the whole thing was fake. It was like an attempt to entrap me into, you know, getting thugs to do something criminal. And this was one of many attempts to entrap me. The thing with the 70 kilos of marijuana was another. Tony Blair, the former Prime Minister of the UK, was recorded saying they're going to put me away on drug charges. And then these people show up with these drugs. But more important was that, and this is the big one, you see, I was trying to convince the Japanese to use their $7 trillion they'd earned exporting to the world since World War II on a campaign to fix up the planet. And the Japanese sort of agreed. And what happened was that they were, you know, first of all, Takanaka told me the reason he handed over control of Japanese corporations was because Japan had been threatened with an earthquake machine. Then we have Zagami showing up and saying Japan's going to be hit with a tsunami and an earthquake before it happens. He's in a book, right? And then with this Alexander Romanov character, when he tells me that he had smuggled in a nuclear weapon together with the 70 kilos of marijuana. And the nuclear weapon was taken from the Russian submarine, the Kursk, that sank in the year 2000. It was a 500-megaton bomb. And then he told me that the bomb was located in a property owned by former Prime Minister Nakasone, a friend of David Rockefeller's. Then they told me the bomb was in the basement of the North Korean Citizens Association meeting, association in North Korean, you know, embassy in Japan. And I told the police, and I told, you know, I wrote about it in advance saying there's going to be nuclear terror. And what happened was that Alexander Romanov, who was actually an Australian agent, went to the Australian embassy and said they're going to have a nuclear terror attack against Japan. And the day after he went to the Australian embassy, Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd was fired by the Federal Reserve Board, okay? This is... So we're trying to say, and then the Japanese military intelligence tells me that the bomb had been put on board the deep sea drilling ship, the Chikyu, and it was in the local news report saying it was drilling into the seabed off the shore of Sendai, where the tsunami and hit. So this was, so you have Zagami threatening Japan with a tsunami before it happens. And he says he got that from, moon charts. Well, that's a bunch of BS. This was a Western intelligence attack against Japan aimed at extorting money. Mm. And that's the money they use to finance these wars in the Middle East that caused so much misery. Because it was, instead of using the money to save the planet, they wanted to use the money for their stupid or the insane end time scenario. So that's why I had a break. But the other thing that happened with Zagami, as I already mentioned, is when I got to Italy, they tried to kill me. But I want one more thing to say. Vincenzo Mazzara, the guy who actually tried to kill me, and I actually now have a very good relationship, and we're on a very friendly basis, because I've convinced him and his group that saving the planet is a better plan than, a fake Armageddon, and they agree with me. So I'm not, in any conflict with Mazzara, even though he at one point tried to kill me.
And he's admitted to you this, Vincenzo Mazzara?
Well, yeah, they did. I mean, it's sort of like understood. But the other thing that happened to Mazzara is he was found outside near the headquarters of the BIS in Switzerland with a gun and a sophisticated lockpicking device. And he was beaten up by the CIA and sent back to Italy. This happened too. So the guy's he's a cavalier of the Teutonic Knights. He's a high-level Vatican agent. But at this point, I've convinced the Vatican that, we're on the same page, that we want to, end poverty, stop environmental destruction, and have world peace. So he's just a professional. He's doing his job. It wasn't personal, so I'm okay with that,
Hey, everybody needs to make a living, even if it's a murdering journalist. I wanted to ask you this. You dropped this little thing on Prepare for Change. You said Pope Francis is visiting Japan in November, and let me play this clip.
Pope Francis is visiting Japan in November.
Okay.
And I'm hoping to meet him, but I don't think that's going to happen, But I put a request through the P2.
You put a request through the P2? So that part surprised me, that you have a relationship with the P2 after... they tried to kill
him. Mazzara, of course, and now the P3.
So Mr. Mazzara is your contact.
One of my contacts. You remember, I did go to Sophia University, which was a Jesuit university, and I know the old Jesuits there, who are already close to the Pope. So I have these connections as well.
Mm. And when he visited, did you get a line through? Did you get an audience with him when he was in Japan?
He read a note from me, a handwritten note.
Do you want to divulge any of the information that the Pope had to say to you, or?
He didn't, basically, what he's saying in public is what, I think is what he means. They want world peace, and they want some sort of loose world federal government, so that we, international criminals like the Zionists can't operate with impunity anymore.
Hmm. This is what Leo Zagami had to say. Well, Leo was going to do my podcast just as you're doing now. We had a time set up. We had everything. I sent him the list of questions. One of the questions is, did you try to kill Mr. Fulford in Milan? And instead of doing my podcast, he did his own webcast using my questions, and this is what he had to say of that question.
I gave my time to this guy, and I made his trip to Italy between Rome and Milan. Then he was supposed, I think, to go to Switzerland also. And I took care of everything. I introduced him to people that were nice to him, and that later on he exposed as potential assassins in a plot to kill him. I don't know, guys. I don't know what's wrong with this person.
He paid for the cab fare. Well, I mean, why are you complaining, Mr. Fulford?
Well, you know, he did put me up in a nice apartment, and I did meet a lot of different people, you know, many interesting people. And that part was all very good, and I appreciate that, and I learned a lot. I met, like, a French general, and I met Italian, you know, treasury police, and I met mafiosi types. I met all sorts of people, so that was good. I learned a lot about that. The problem was when I went to Milan and, you know, I'll repeat the story. I mean, Vincenzo Mazzari took out this cigar. He said, "Do you mind if I smoke?" And he spent the whole day puffing smoke at me, blowing it in my direction, right? And he took me to see the Black Sun, which he said was their god, right? And that night, my lungs seized up, and I nearly, you know, choked to death, and I really nearly died. But I didn't. And the next morning, he's supposed to meet me at 9, and he doesn't show up. And I phoned him up and said, "Well, why aren't you here?" And he said, like, with real surprise in his voice, "You're still alive?" You know? And then I said to him when we met, I said, "Look, you know, don't smoke that cigar anymore. Don't try to kill me again, or you provoke a very dangerous incident, which neither of us wants to happen." And that's what I know. Okay, and I was sick for a couple weeks after coming back to Japan, you know, but again, I think that I was able to convince these guys that we're on the same page, that we want the same thing, you know. So the Black Sun organization is now in favor of some sort of loose world federation, and then a plan to end poverty, stop environmental destruction, and send humanity out to colonize the universe. We're all on the same page with that plan now.
Mr. Zagami very recently had a very disingenuous hypothesis as to how you became ill.
But Fulford accused this Vincenzo Mazzara of having attempted his life. I think that only with what he bought at the Italian deli when he was there in Rome, that was an attempt to his life. I mean, he bought the most extraordinary set of crazy stuff, which I myself never ate, even when living in Italy for so many years. The most obscure salami made of livers and crazy stuff. He would buy everything, and I don't know how he got all the stuff into Japan, because it was a health hazard.
He said that you got sick on salami.
Well, that would have happened after I got back to Japan, right? I mean, Italian sausage is very good. I went to a delicatessen and got a bunch of Italian sausage, because you can't buy it in Japan. All they got is German sausage, and it's all got, you know, nitrites in it. But, you know, I bought some high-quality Italian sausage, and no, that didn't make me sick.
That's exactly what I would have done. He's like, you know, he's Italian. Shouldn't he be sticking up for the culinary traditions there? But he also said this on the Fukushima incident.
This was my third book in Japan. This was very successful. This book sold something like 50,000 copies. Not 50, I think, around 40, though. It was very successful. And this was the book where I forecast for 2011 the possibility of a tsunami and, of course, an imminent danger to the coastline of Japan. And so I simply forecasted because I was told by people studying the astronomy conjunctions that there could have been this possibility. So I just put it out there, okay?
All right, what do you think? Did you believe in astronomy conjunctions or nuclear weapons being drilled into the seabed by the ship Chikyu, as recorded in local news reports?
I believe it's the religion of the Illuminati, just as we spoke about the Melanie Martinez situation, who she's singing about of Mr. Yeah. Principal, why are you killing kids? So to put it in a book, just as it was put in a book that you were going to be murdered for this journalist is exposing too much, they put it in a book and then they tell you about the book as a way to admit to you that they're about to do. So when he says he got from some astrological person, you know, the thing about Leo Zagami that I've noticed is he didn't want to do an interview with me because I would be a worthy opponent. He would rather, he's too much of a controlling narcissist to allow this. So for him to put in a book something that he got from an astrologer doesn't work up to his personality, in my opinion.
Let me tell you, I got a bunch of threatening emails saying that something was going to happen to Japan before this happened, and then I got a bunch of bragging emails, you know, taking credit for it.
Mm.
And the other thing was that Prime Minister Kan Naoto, who was the Prime Minister of Japan at the time, he was spotted at Freemason headquarters in Tokyo the day before the tsunami, being shown a map of Japan missing the region where the tsunami hit.
I guess he must have got the same astrological chart, you know?
Right, you know, except that, I got the detailed, I mean, I actually talked to the person who smuggled the nuclear weapon into Japan, who told me, and he went to the Australian embassy to say, hey, they've smuggled a nuclear weapon. The guy was a drug smuggler, and he was smuggling like 100 kilos of hashish into Japan every couple of months with a yacht. But suddenly he's called to the Thailand and he's given a nuclear weapon, saying you got to take that in together with these 70 kilos of contaminated marijuana.
Mm.
And so he went and blew the whistle. He said, hey, they've made me smuggle a nuclear weapon. There's going to be a nuclear terror attack. And you know, the result was a poor guy got isolated, cut off. They tried to kill him, too. He got put in a mental hospital a couple of times. And, you know, unfortunately, he smoked that marijuana, and it did cause him severe mental hardships, although he's okay now. His system cleaned out. But, boy, he sure got a lot of trouble for just trying to prevent nuclear terror.
So Alexander Romanov, he smuggled the nuke. Then we have Peter Hans Klovenbach and Benjamin Netanyahu. What are their roles in the Fukushima?
Well, Netanyahu was recorded the day after the attack saying that if Japan didn't hand over all their foreign exchange holdings to Israel, that the next they would attack Mount Fuji. And we have Peter Hans Klovenbach bragging on the phone, you know, after the attack that he was Satan. The NSA has recorded all of this.
He's the Black Pope. Leo Zagami made a petty claim about some stolen property that he claims that you stole from him. Let me just play this.
So Benjamin Fulford came to Italy. But in Italy, people don't know, he also stole something from inside my flat in Rome. And that is not an accusation, the accusation that I make lightly. Benjamin Fulford stole the 44 pages that I received while I was doing the magic of Abrabening the Mage in 1993. I received 44 pages of something which I received, of course, through mediumship.
Did you take his mediumship material, Mr. Fulford?
No. I mean, if I had, I would have published it. But no, I didn't. I don't steal stuff.
And then he also said a book that is like a code book of Illuminati language or something.
No. I mean, nothing. I don't steal stuff.
Well, you alluded to a secret society asking you to side with China, and that's what Leo Zagami picked up on. So I want to play this.
Once he was in Rome, we took a taxi once. After showing the magical door in Piazza Vittorio, we were on our way, I think we were on Via Merulana, going towards the Church of San Giovanni, the church where I was staying earlier on in the show. They had stole some money, so I wanted to bring him there. And Well, I was in the taxi with him. He confessed. I said, so who are you working with, Benjamin? And he confessed that he was working for the Chinese drama, for the Chinese Freemasons, for the Chi-Coms, because Chinese are all one big evil.
The Chinese communists.
Well, the people I met were actually Taiwanese, and they hated communism. Okay, the red and blue. They were based in Taiwan. They were anti-communists. So that's not true. And like I say, I had a choice. You know, either I join this group that wants to kill 90% of humanity, or they kill me, or I get protection from this group that can only work for the greater good. So what choice do I have? But, you know, after this, because I refused to agree with their plan for China to rule the world, they cast me out. Mm. But at the time I visited Italy, it may well have been true. And I had put this out publicly that I was allowed to publicly state that I was a member of this group. And I published it on the internet. It's not a secret. But then, like I say, later, and this was secret, they cast me out because I refused to agree to have China rule the world. Mm-hmm. And I said I would only obey them if I agreed with them. They had to convince me they were right first. So they cut me off. But since then, I was able to contact all these Western groups, and that's what we call the White Dragon Society.
Mm. This is another claim that Mr. Zagami slandered you with.
And simply because I went against the system. I'm not somebody who is lazing around or lying there like a slob, like Fulford does in his apartment in Tokyo with all his cats and all his sushi, pieces of food. It's scenario. It's crazy. And basically inventing stories of, we're going to arrest everybody. Tomorrow the elite is going to be the Khazars, this and that. They will do this and they will do that and blah, blah, blah. It's all rubbish. No consistency. Real journalism has to bring the evidence. Otherwise, it's theory.
Your cats and your sushi. First of all, it's like, what is he talking about there? He eats sushi. I mean, you live in Japan. But Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was living with three cats. Now I am living with two dogs. But, you know, so what?
you know, your journalism with your...
have cats?
Your sushi and your cats, that's not journalism. What is he talking about?
Oh, yeah, so why do I even have to respond to this?
I don't know. Sorry. But
the thing is, though, okay, there is a legitimate thing, you know, that people need to understand. It's I've been told by my sources that they, you know, and a lot of people have written this too, that there's 140,000 arrest warrants out there, sealed arrest warrants, right?
Yeah.
And they are there. You can confirm that. And so... But here's the thing. So if you're a journalist and you say, you know, for example, Colin Powell, Secretary of State, says that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. As a journalist, you say, according to Colin Powell, Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. It turns out Colin Powell was lying. But that doesn't mean the journalist was lying. So if I have my sources in the Pentagon saying they're going to arrest all these people, I'm saying it, but then... they're not doing it. It's not me. It's them. And I assume that something is preventing them from making these arrests. But a lot of people have been arrested. A lot of people have been killed. A lot of people have been removed from power.
Mm.
Let's think about it. Since it started, the head of the Bilderberg, the Queen Beatrix had to abdicate. The King of Spain had to abdicate. King of Belgium had to abdicate. The Pope had to quit. You know, the Emperor of Japan had to quit. David Rockefeller and Brzezinski and George Bush Sr., Barbara Bush, Bush Jr., they've all been eliminated. So it's not like nothing's happening.
It's just not the 141 unsealed indictments all at once. And also, you know, the court system is so slow, so... you know, you could logjam a court with 140,000 documents. It's going to take... 75 years for them to go through. So, you know, it's just like last time we were talking about the architects in 9/11 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, having a grand jury investigation, and, you know, the Attorney General of New York said, yes, we have approved this, and now, 2 years later, they haven't done anything. So, you know, it doesn't mean the... I don't know. It's there's a logjam somewhere.
Well, like, it's going to take men with guns, you know, it's not going to, and going through the court system isn't going to work, you know, that's not, this is war, this is not, you know, a situation where you can trust the court system to deal with it, it's just too big.
Mm. Well, before Trump was elected, Newt Gingrich came onto Fox News and said this publicly.
Now they're faced with a very real prospect of Donald Trump becoming the leader of the party, and it absolutely drives them crazy. They just cannot imagine sharing. Well, because he's an outsider. He's not them. He's not part of the club. He's uncontrollable. You know, he hasn't been through the initiation rites. He didn't belong to the secret society. And I think that they don't see him. They have no idea how to relate.
They have no idea how to talk to a guy who hasn't been through initiation rites.
Yeah.
Isn't that just everybody in the establishment is completely out of touch, that they're like, ugh, some muggle who hasn't been through initiation, right? So I thought, oh, finally, some outsider's going to come in and drain the swamp. We're hearing of all these 140,000 arrest warrants. We have QAnon saying that, that you know, the deep state is in big trouble. Yeah, so I think everyone's just a little frustrated that we haven't seen something more dramatic, you know?
Yeah, well, I think part of the problem is that it's not something that can just be sold within the United States, because the thing is that ever since the petrodollar was created by Henry Kissinger and his group in the early 70s, the U.S. has essentially been a parasite. They've been getting stuff from the rest of the world and not paying for it. And the owners of the United States of America Corporation are bankrupt. And so it would cause a collapse of the entire establishment in Washington, D.C. And in a worst-case scenario, it's like when the Soviet Union collapsed, that was also a bankruptcy. You had former generals driving taxi in London, right? So we need an orderly transition, and nobody can agree on what to do, and that's why everything is kind of being logjammed. Mm. Exactly how to go about this?
Because it's like this person has high level skill, but everyone has blood on their hands. So it's like you know, what's the worth of the know-how versus the allegiance of these people?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I've been proposing a takeover by Canada, and not Trudeau, but you know, like the healthy part, the rest of the Anglo-Saxon community, Australia, New Zealand, England, Canada could help restore real democracy and real rule of law to the United States, which has been taken over by a messianic cult. And you know, because we're the same people with the same history, it's not going to be a foreign takeover. It's going to be a family affair, you know, cleaning up a system that becomes so corrupt that it just needs to be unplugged and then rebooted.
You had an interview with Robert David Steele, and you spoke of the U.S. bankruptcy.
Close to falling apart. Anybody who's been in finance a long time understands that this... A high stock market with a plunging economy means that the stock market's out of touch with reality and it's going to come down. Look, it's easy to say there's a bubble. It's much harder to predict exactly when it's going to pop. Okay, so I don't want to be, you know, make a specific date saying it's all going to crash at this time. But it's most likely, I'm talking to Asian elders and stuff, that this thing will crash before the election. And that Trump will have to negotiate the bankruptcy of the United States.
Do you still feel like that's what we're in for?
Well, why do you think China just got hit with a bioweapon? It's part of the negotiations, you know?
The coronavirus.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is exactly what's happening right now. And I've been saying, no, we gotta, you know, we gotta reboot that whole place. But they're fighting tooth and nail to prevent that from happening. And they've been using their bio-engineered weapons, and then they've been, and they're gonna, God knows what else they're gonna do, but that's because they couldn't get money for a January 31st payments deadline.
Is this?
And that's been extended to February 15th at this point. You know, but it's a high tension situation, to be sure.
Is that Trump doing this, or is that some rogue element in the U.S. government sending out the coronavirus to negotiate the bankruptcy deadline payment?
Well, you know, I don't think Trump is fully in charge, but clearly the people who own the current corporation are the ones who've been doing this, and they're the ones who, you know, it was when George Bush, there was a fascist coup d'etat in the United States after 9/11, right? The Patriot Act was the same as the Nazi laws, and then they built all these biowarfare facilities around the world after that, including in Japan. So these are the people we're dealing with. you know, they also have a lot of high-tech space capability and other things that they can negotiate with. And I think that's what's happening. They're using a carrot and stick. The stick is that we're going to hit you with orthoic weapons, bioweapons. We're going to hit you with locusts. But the carrot is we've got all this anti-gravity technology and other stuff that we can bring to the table. I expect the deal will be reached in the end somehow, but it's not yet there. So we're in a very unstable situation right now.
Mm. A colleague, a fellow journalist of yours, Mr. David Wilcock, his big deep state insider was a guy called Pete Peterson, who was a deep state insider. And on his deathbed, or just a week before he died, he says this.
Let me get together with Uncle and see what I can and what I can't say.
Okay. That sounds good.
But I think I'm going to be able to say a lot within 6 to 8 months. I'll be able to say everything.
Really? Why 6 to 8 months?
That's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. If Trump re-wins the election, I'll be able to talk about anything.
Wow.
So, like, this deep state insider is saying if Trump gets his second term, then all of a sudden he'll be able to have this cosmic clearance. David Wilcock always says that for the U.S. president, if they get reelected, so they do two full terms, that now they can actually impose change, and now they can actually have some say over the deep state. Are you hearing any of this?
I've been in touch with the people behind this Pete Peterson character, and the basic thing they told me is that they want to make sure that when there's a bankruptcy of the U.S. corporation, that U.S. citizens are restored to full sovereignty and common law, not admiralty law, as a condition for releasing the 5,000 patents that have been suppressed for so-called national security reasons. And I may fly to the U.S. to talk to these people soon.
To New York City?
I'm not going to say where, but somewhere. But it's not New York City, okay?
All right. There was also you know, you did Project Camelot. Kerry Cassidy has done this podcast before. I'm a huge fan of Kerry Cassidy's work in Project Camelot, including your interview. That's how I got to know you. She had a guy on called Bill Deagle who said two very interesting things. I want to play this first clip.
The real purpose of the Kabbalah, if you want the highest levels, which is the highest level of all masonry, is Kabbalah, right? Is that we are, the revelation is you are the Luciferic satanic power. You don't need to go to a higher God. You are God.
And I feel like that's what game these people play. They go, when they put out a coronavirus or they do, they just think, no, I have the divine right to do it, you know?
Well, when there's people first contact me, they did say, there is no God. We are God. They did tell me this. I remember that.
The people behind Pete Peterson told you that, or who are who? What
no, these would be the when I first got involved, the Illuminati, or whatever you want to call them. I wouldn't call them the Illuminati. I'd call them the Kabbalists. Yeah, they did say that, but you know, the fact is, I was brought up as an atheist. Okay, but I know this much: we didn't create ourselves. Something else created us. So there is a creator. You can call it nature, you can call it God, it's up to you, but we didn't create the universe, and therefore we need to be humble. And these people are as arrogant as you can get.
They always have one guy at top. People call him the M1, or they call him the Pindar. Bill Deagle apparently met the Pindar, the number one ruler of Illuminati.
I woke up in the middle of the night, bolt upright, and I sat up, and I had all the lights on, because I'd have to periodically go to the restroom or whatever. Hell, lights on, and this guy standing in front of me, about, you know, what I call a $5,000 tuxedo, not a gray hair in his head, mid-50s, slim and trim. I said, how did you get in here? And he says, it's wonderful to see you, my son. I said, you're not my father. And I looked at this guy, and he looked like French nobility, right? And I said, who are you? He says, I'm Godfrey, Baron Guy de Rothschild, the Pindar. I know who you are. You're the representative of the Luciferic power that controls Earth. He says, yes, I'm the CEO of Earth, Inc. Mm-hmm. And I'm the man that sits in the 13th chair of the Druidic Council. I want you to be my understudy, and when I transcend, I want you to take over my job.
It's quite a story. He wakes up, and the Pindar's in his room.
Well, right now, as far as I can tell, there are several self-proclaimed Pindars out there, and there's a situation of chaos and flux at the highest levels of world power.
This guy called Michel Rockefeller claims to be the Pindar.
there is a group that owns the Fortune 500 companies, and I think these are the people we're trying to overthrow. So, yeah, maybe.
Is that part of the logjam that since David Rockefeller died, there's no, like, one guy who has as much power? There's this power vacuum, and so...
That's exactly the case. It's like, you know, if you study a history of, like, Chinese or Egyptian dynasties or something, when you have an emperor who rules for, like, 50 or 70 years or something, there's always chaos afterwards because there's a vacuum. And that's what we're experiencing right now.
There's talk of having a jubilee, a cancellation of all debt when the corporate United States goes bankrupt. I think it would be a good idea to get a bunch of credit cards the day before that happens and then go to the strip club and pay for vacations. And then the next day, hey, I'm debt free.
Well, I personally in favor of a great big party to start the new age with, you know. I mean, you know, like a party that we'll remember for 1,000 years from now. I mean, that would be great, you know. what better way than with a big party, eh? And then they could take out all their Project Bluebeam stuff and everything else they've been preparing and then, you know, put holograms in the sky and whatever, you know. Let's just have a huge event and then a jubilee, for sure, to start things off. That would be great.
Right. So let's wrap up now. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I appreciate you going through these accusations with me. You said in the email, no mudslinging. I'm not trying to mudsling nothing. I know I kind of stir the shit sometimes, but, you know, someone said all these, you said he tried to kill you. Yeah. He said he didn't. I have to get to the bottom of it, you know?
Sure. I'd rather, you know, concentrate on positive things, but, and not get involved in fighting other people all the time. But there was one more thing he said I want to mention, that when I was originally initiated into that Asian secret society, it wasn't in a basement full of skeletons, like you said, or bones. That's certainly the sort of thing they do. It was in a Chinese restaurant, the second floor of a Chinese restaurant, and not even a very fancy Chinese restaurant, okay? But, like I say, those people then, I told them, you know, we agreed that we wanted to stop the plan to kill 90% of the world's population, but we don't want a one China world. We want a multipolar world where everybody is friends, okay?
All right. Well, I'm glad that I could consider you a friend, Mr. Fulford. I think you're a great guy. You're very open and honest with me. You know, when you say you're going to do the podcast, you do it and you answer all my questions. So that kind of ends my suspicions as to your motivations. So again, it's BenjaminFulford.net. You can see his weekly bulletin, and he also has a shop. Oh, by the way, Mr. Fulford, I have a little suggestion for your shop. You can take it or leave it. You sell a couple of interesting items there. I was wondering if I could get a member of the White Dragon Society T-shirt, you know? If I could represent that I'm a member of the White Dragon Society, trying to do good and trying to end poverty, stop environmental destruction.
Good idea. I'll definitely get onto the T-shirt idea. I mean, I'm not really a businessman, but I do have bills to pay and people to support. So yeah. And also, it would be a good idea. All right, I'll definitely.
It's
take
like another. You know, we have like the membership. You know, it's like, hey, I'm representing this. These are my political beliefs. You know, just a thought.
Thanks. All right. Anyway, thanks for having me on.
All right.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Take care, Mr. Fulford.
All right.
That's been another episode of Highway Diary in the Bag. Let me just play, because I have this here. I didn't get to it. I want to keep Mr. Fulford to an hour. This is what Leo Zagami said that Ben's initiation into the Masons was.
Did Benjamin Fulford ever show you who initiated him or what kind of initiation he received? No. Did he ever talk to you in depth about Chinese Freemasonry? No. Now, one of the topics we discussed with Fulford was the master of ceremony during his initiation. And this is a photo of a typical master of ceremony of Chinese Freemasonry. He usually hangs around simply with an incense in his hand. But as you can see, everything is symbolic. Even the one slipper he's wearing, everything, the sign he's giving.
Yeah, and he did say there's skeletons of previous masters, but that's what they do in Italy. That's what they do at the P2. That's not what they do in, you know, it was just a piece of paper in a Chinese restaurant. Whoa, what a spooky initiation that is. Anyway, yeah, I was very disappointed with Mr. Zagami making all these claims and not letting me really hold him to account the way Mr. Fulford was very open and letting me say, hey, did this happen? Did this happen? You know? And he was pretty open about everything. So, I mean, I don't know. My money's on Ben. Anyway, that's been another episode of the Highway Diary in the Bag. Again, I will be performing at the Verve Comedy... well, it's a restaurant called Verve. It's in Somerville, New Jersey. And it is February 21st. There's a show 7:30, 9:30, and 11:30. And $25 at the door. Anyway, that's been another episode of the Highway Diary in the Bag. Thanks to my guest, Benjamin Fulford. Bye-bye.